KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Good morning. President Trump's sweeping tariffs became a reality at midnight. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are questioning his strategy. We'll hear from Democratic Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington State. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. The U.S. Supreme Court has once again ruled in President Trump's favor. I'm Martinez.
And I'm Leila Faldin. This time, the justices are allowing Trump's dismissal of 16,000 probationary federal employees to go forward, at least for now. Three children without legal status in the U.S. are due back in a rural New York school after protests and bipartisan lobbying. And British pop star Lola Young stops by our studios ahead of Coachella and talks about getting personal in her songwriting. It's Wednesday, April 9th. Happy birthday to Marc Jacobs. The fashion designer is 62 years old today. The news is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. President Trump's latest round of tariffs went into effect overnight. That comes on top of the minimum 10% tariffs that he imposed on nearly all countries last weekend. Now, China has announced an additional 50% retaliatory tariff on all U.S. goods, bringing its total tariffs on U.S. items to 84%. As NPR's Emily Fang reports, the trade war between the world's two largest economies is escalating.
China has showed no signs of backing down after President Trump's most recent round of tariffs on Chinese goods, which now total north of 100%. China's new levies of 50% on U.S. imports go into effect starting Thursday. China's government has also filed two complaints with the World Trade Organization, saying the U.S. levies break international law. Earlier, Beijing signaled it was trying to negotiate with the Trump administration, but it switched this week, calling Trump's latest tariffs a, quote, mistake on top of a mistake, exposing what it says is a, quote, blackmailing nature. Emily Fang, NPR News.
Mary Lovely is a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. She says during a trade war in 2018, U.S. businesses saw some effects. But she says this time is different for Americans because the tariff rates are very high and could go much higher.
Well, I think you'll see it most clearly in consumer goods. These were largely spared, not entirely spared in the first trade war, but we're going to see it quickly in electronics, in home goods, in clothing and apparel, lots of things that people buy very often. Companies, of course, will see it in all kinds of inputs and commodities that they buy from abroad.
She spoke to NPR's Morning Edition. The Republican-led House of Representatives has rejected a plan to allow members of Congress to cast proxy votes after they become new parents. Now the House is taking a different approach. NPR's Claudia Grisales reports a new GOP deal scuttled the effort that paralyzed the House floor last week.
Florida Republican Congresswoman Ana Paulina Luna teamed up with House Speaker Mike Johnson to revive an obscure 19th century House rule to let absent members pair up to record their intent to vote.
It's not what we initially had wanted, but it's a step forward in the right direction.
Luna had moved on from a bipartisan plan with Colorado Democrat Brittany Patterson, who argued the House needs proxy voting.
And make it more accessible to young families and more reflective of the American people.
Although President Trump expressed support for the bipartisan effort, Johnson argued it was unconstitutional. Luna and Patterson publicly disagreed, and then came word Luna cut a deal to rely on vote pairing instead. Claudia Rizales, NPR News.
This is NPR. The U.S. Supreme Court is going to allow President Trump to fire thousands of federal probationary employees. That decision overturns an order by a lower federal court that affected workers at six federal agencies. But a different case is still in the works. A different federal judge had ordered some of the same employees to be rehired by the government. It's not clear what the federal agencies will do now. The National Weather Service won't provide Spanish language translations of its weather alerts anymore, including emergency information. The Trump administration has ended a contract with a company that provided the translations. An old album has returned to the top of the pop charts. NPR Stephen Thompson explains that's thanks to a deluxe edition containing new songs.
For the last 2 weeks, Playboi Carti has topped the Billboard albums chart with a brand new record called Music. But this week, it's been replaced by an album that topped the chart more than a year ago. Ariana Grande recently reissued her 2024 album Eternal Sunshine with 5 new songs and an extended version of another. With 6 fresh tracks and fresh vinyl and CD editions for sale, the album leapt from number 87 all the way back to number 1. The Wicked star also landed all 6 of those new tracks in the Billboard Hot 100, with Twilight Zone hitting the top 20. Stephen Thompson, NPR News.
And I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Indeed, committed to giving job listings increased visibility with relevant candidates through its sponsored jobs feature. Learn more at Indeed.com/NPR. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Leila Fadel in Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Trump's sweeping new tariffs took effect shortly after midnight on nearly all U.S. trading partners. We speak with the Democratic senator who co-authored a bipartisan bill that would require the president to consult with Congress on the measures.
First, though, the tariffs will cause U.S. businesses to pay extra to import products into the country.
And for some of those major trading partners, that new tax is steep. From an added 20% on goods from the European Union to an extra 46% on goods from Vietnam. And they will likely mean higher prices for consumers. But Trump has opened the door to changes. Here's what he said yesterday.
And we're doing very well in making, I call them tailored deals, not off the rack. These are tailored, highly tailored deals. Right now, Japan is flying here to make a deal. South Korea is flying here to make a deal, and others are flying here.
Danielle Kurtzleben is NPR's White House correspondent. So, Danielle, what is the White House saying about how long these tariffs will last?
Well, the White House's messaging on this has been confusing. There were several days there where you'd have one administration official saying these tariffs are non-negotiable, that they're going to stick around a while, and then you'd have another official saying Trump was open to negotiation. But yesterday, the White House seemed to have settled on the idea that, yes, these tariffs are negotiable. They've said that about 70 countries have reached out for some sort of talks. And yesterday, Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt insisted that these tariffs have always been open to negotiation.
The entire administration has always said that President Trump is willing to pick up the phone and talk. And the president met with his trade team this morning, and he directed them to have tailor-made trade deals with each and every country that calls up this administration to strike a deal.
And that's a narrative that fits with an image Trump really likes to project, which is that he's a master deal maker. But he did say yesterday it's a long list of countries and it could take some time to get through.
All right, so long list, which countries have reached out?
Well, Trump has said he's spoken to leaders of multiple major trading partners, including Japan, South Korea, and Vietnam. But one country that has not reached out, according to Trump, is China. Now, there's been some back and forth on retaliation with them, but as a result, the tariff on Chinese goods is now at least 104%. So that more than doubles the cost of a lot of consumer goods from them. And if China's retaliatory tariffs on U.S. products stays in place, that could very much hurt some U.S. businesses like farmers who send a lot of crops there.
Yeah. Is Donald Trump getting any pushback from within his own party?
Well, not only that, there's been pushback from within his own team. Elon Musk has openly opposed these tariffs. He's the head of Tesla and SpaceX. And yesterday on social media, he lashed out at top trade advisor Peter Navarro in several really insulting posts. At one point, he called Navarro, quote, dumber than a sack of bricks. Now, on Capitol Hill, things are much more polite, but Republican anger is starting to show. U.S. Trade Representative Jameson Greer faced the Senate Finance Committee in a hearing yesterday. And several Republicans really pressed him on the tariffs. They asked, for example, when and how the tariffs might go away. Now, in addition, there have now been bipartisan bills introduced in both the House and the Senate seeking to restrict the president's tariff authority. Those bills, they're unlikely to pass, but they do have a little Republican support, and that represents some cracks in what's usually a very unified GOP.
That's NPR's Danielle Kurtzleben. Thanks a lot, Danielle.
Thank you.
President Trump's escalating tariffs on trading partners around the globe has rattled U.S. and international markets. It's also set off alarm bells in Congress, where senators have introduced bipartisan legislation to rein in presidential powers on tariffs. I'm joined now by one of the authors of that legislation, Democratic Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington. Good morning.
Good morning, Layla.
Thank you for being here. So I want to start with the bill you drafted. What would it accomplish if it became law?
Well, Congress constitutionally has the right on trade, really, if you think about it, on interstate commerce and foreign commerce. But this president has misconstrued and we think actually misused this authority. So we're saying we want Congress to reassert itself in this debate and get approval for these unbelievable tariffs that are costing consumers so much money and ruining people's 401 savings.
This is described as a bipartisan bill. You co-authored it with Senator Chuck Grassley, a Republican. But how much Republican support is there for this bill? I mean, can it pass?
Well, I think we have seven Republicans on the bill so far, which was just introduced last week. The House representatives introduced a bill with two Democrats and two Republicans. So it is continuing to be bipartisan, bicameral. And I think it's because people are hearing from their constituents who are saying, wait, why am I paying this extra tax on these consumer goods? I don't want to do it.
Now, the president has threatened to veto your bill if it ever comes to his desk for signature. And already a lot of people are saying it's really, really unlikely that it could pass, even if it passed the Senate, that it could pass the House. We're seeing the House Speaker Mike Johnson, Senate Majority Leader John Thune are still sticking with the White House. What would you do in that case if you get this bill passed and Trump vetoes it?
Well, Layla, I don't think people thought the economy was going to drop $11 trillion investment either. And so the point is that this is wreaking havoc on consumers, which are basically GDP is about 70% consumer spending. So Congress has a right to say, what is the plan here? Why aren't you consulting with us as we have to consult with our constituents? And the thing that people don't want is to have continued uncertainty. A lot of people who are looking at their 401, maybe they were going to retire this year, have great concerns about what that means for them personally.
But what I'm asking is there a true path in both chambers to get this to become law?
Oh, for sure. This continues to be an economic nightmare for people. Yes, there will be a path.
And if Trump vetoes the bill, you would need to get 2/3 in both chambers, right, for it to pass? I mean, are there other paths? Are there other options?
Well, my colleague, Senator Wyden, is introducing another resolution related to this. So the good news is that our colleagues are waking up to the fact that the president went too far and that we need to have a discussion. We need to listen to our constituents. We need to listen to the small businesses. We need to listen to the consumer who's being hurt here and decide what it is that we can do to reassert ourselves in the debate.
Now, Trump says the tariffs are necessary short-term pain or medicine to deal with
this long-term problem of the $1.2 trillion trade deficit. Do you agree with that?
I disagree. First of all, we need to continue to drive inflation down. A tariff is just like a tax that's going to make everything more expensive at the grocery store, at the appliance store. I think that if the president wanted to use a power, he should unite people collectively, like the Europeans or other Asian countries, and try to counter China that way through a coalition. And then they could force open markets or force more fair accommodations. But we...
Would be the approach you would support to closing the trade gap.
Oh, for sure. Yes. I represent one of the most trade-dependent states in the country. And so we're very proud that we make airplanes, that we grow a lot of agriculture products. So we want the United States to be a leader in the economy of tomorrow and all the job creation that is going to come with that. And we think that the way you get there, just like these companies have become big juggernaut companies in the Northwest, you get there by innovating, by having a great skilled workforce, and by having open markets to sell your product to. And that there are strategies to take the next step in that that would help the United States in an information age win more market share. And we should be doing that versus kind of taking our best trade allies and making them mad at a time when we really need them to be on our side.
That's Democratic Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
We invited the Republican co-sponsor of the bill, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, to join us. He respectfully declined.
What could President Trump's tariffs mean for duty-free shopping, like the kind found at international airports?
So duty-free shopping basically is an exemption of import duties and taxes.
Scott Laird is a freelance travel writer. He's written about tariffs and duty-free shopping for voters.
Because the notion is that if you are immediately leaving the country and not using the products that you're buying in that country, that you shouldn't be subject to import duties or local taxes when you purchase those items.
Laird says right now at an airport duty-free shop, you show a boarding pass for international travel, and when you purchase your items, you get them without duties or taxes.
In many cases, there can be substantial savings, particularly on items that even before the tariffs were introduced had existing tariffs on them that made them more expensive in the United States. And those are typically luxury items like imported wines, cosmetics, and tobacco.
Duty-free shopping isn't just for people who can afford expensive international flights. They're also available at land border crossings.
Americans who live near our border with Canada and Mexico can also benefit because there are typically duty-free shops right around the border checkpoints with those countries as well.
So, could duty-free shopping be an option for consumers trying to avoid import taxes?
No, not in a large way.
MIT professor Simon Johnson is a former chief economist at the International Monetary Fund and joint winner of the 2024 Nobel Prize in Economics.
If you take a trip to Canada and the Canadians are willing to sell you something that's free of Canadian taxes at the border, then the issue is, how does U.S. Customs view what you're bringing back in the trunk of your car or if you have a trailer or a truck?
Johnson doesn't expect significant crackdowns on small amounts of goods.
But it would really surprise me, and it would go counter to the spirit and the letter of what Mr. Trump is putting forward if they were to allow significant amounts of imports in that way.
U.S. travelers are allowed to return with $800 worth of goods or gifts duty-free, but Laird cautions...
You absolutely need to declare anything that you are bringing back into the country, because if you don't, it can have implications on your future international travel. It can result in longer waits at customs because, you know, customs can't trust you anymore.
You hear that? Don't even try to fill your car with duty-free chocolates, eh?
Ah, foiled again. This is NPR News.
Thank you.
On the next Fresh Air, how can one man disrupt the global economy? We talk about Trump's tariffs, why they've led stock markets to plummet, how they're changing our relationship with allies and adversaries, and what tariffs mean for our daily lives. We talk with Zanny Minton Beddoes, editor-in-chief of The Economist. Join us.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Fisher Investments. Fisher is committed to helping clients stay on track to reach their financial goals and enjoy a comfortable retirement. FisherInvestments.com. Investing in securities involves the risk of loss. From Progressive Insurance, home of the Name Your Price tool, so drivers can see coverage options at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Price and coverage match limited by state law. From BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 30,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public. And from listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Faldin.
And I'm A. Martinez. Have you ever felt like you just couldn't please anyone? Well, that's what inspired Lola Young's hit, Messy. That song has topped charts all over the world after it went viral on TikTok last year. Who are you saying that to?
I think it was to myself in a weird roundabout way. Like, can I not just accept this person who I am, and can I not just let other people love me for what I am? And like, then also I was saying it to my ex, like.
To your ex, yeah. And to you, and maybe the world, right? Because sometimes the world wants you to
be something. Wants you to be something and yeah. You're not.
Lola Young stopped by our offices in Culver City. She's in Los Angeles to take one of the biggest stages of her career, Coachella, which starts this weekend. And Messy is sure to be the sing-along moment of her set. She says being diagnosed with ADHD helped her make sense of the song.
I got diagnosed after I wrote the song, and it just made a lot of sense for me, working out things mentally, understanding that, like, God, that's why I'm like that. And I'm too perfect till I open my big mouth. I want to be me. Is that not allowed? And I'm too clever, and then I'm too stupid dumb. You hate it when I cry, unless it's that time of the month. And I'm too perfect, so I show you that I'm not a thousand people I could be, but you would hate the whole damn law.
Do you ever think, like, when you're creating music, when you're writing it, that, like, maybe this line would eventually sound great on TikTok?
I mean, no.
No? Yeah. It's, and if you ever thought that, would you feel like, hey, wait a second?
Yes, because you have to, I never try and think about the consumer or what's going to happen to the song. I just try and write from the heart. And as soon as I start thinking about the outside room, as it were, like, then it can massively mess you up and make you think, oh my God, like, what am I actually doing this for? Who am I doing it for?
You're what, 24 years old?
I'm 24, correct.
From London.
Yeah.
How did you get into just wanting to sing?
I always knew it was what I wanted to be, and I think I was never good at anything else, so I didn't have the kind of B option of like, oh, this is what I'd do if it didn't work out. So I just had to put my mind to it and go, I have to just keep working hard and keep honing in on my craft, and I feel like something good's going to happen. And I didn't know it would be at what scale or what that would come of it. I just had that constant like sense of, this is really what I want.
This is actually what most people figure out what they want to do. They realize what they're only good at. Right?
Exactly, yeah. We can pretend that we're
in love when you come around. Let's listen to another song, Wish You Were Dead. So Lola, this song gives me the vibe that you think there's a big difference between saying you love someone and actually liking that person.
Yes,
so
yes,
what's
yes,
the,
yes,
to
yes.
you, what's the difference?
I'm still figuring out, in all honesty, why I think love is. I think love changes as you get older and as you're in love more times. Like, it can take shape in different ways and you feel it in different ways. But in the relationships I've been in, I felt like I haven't really liked them, and I can claim I've been like in love with them. And even in that line, I say, like, you know, we can pretend that we're in love, because it's just like that feeling of lust and toxicity can sometimes overpower what is the premise of it.
And maybe not literally dead, but dead to you, like dead.
Yeah, dead to me. Oh yeah, yeah. I'm literally dead. I'm
joking. And literally dead.
No, no, of course, no, definitely not. So. No.
Now let's listen to one more song. This song is Intrusive Thoughts.
Hey there, intrusive thoughts, you don't make sense at all. Wish you would go away with some paracetamol. Hey there, intrusive thoughts, maybe I'm wired all strange. All these intrusive thoughts, don't know what's real or not. They scream inside my head, wish I could kill the Lord. I've got intrusive thoughts, maybe I'm wired all strange.
Now, you were diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder at 17, and you've only talked about mental issues. Do you, Lola, view that as something that someday, for lack of a better word, and I apologize ahead of time, something that you want to cure, or is that something that just makes you you?
I think it just makes me me. I think I've gone through the motions with my mental health, and I think I've spoken about it a lot publicly, and I think it's something that can be used in a powerful way, but I think it's a thing I've learned to live with. I think there's a lot to say about it, but I think I'll leave it just, you know, it being difficult and beautiful at the same time.
Kinda messed up that you are me. Guess we just play nicely.
Yeah, because I think one of the great things about artists today, that it seems like that is something that is not off limits anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There's like an openness to artists talking about this, which I think helps people that listen to it and think, you know what, I don't have to just sit here in silence and suffer.
No, for sure. I think there's a stigma to be broken down. And I think that it's important just to be vocal about what you're experiencing, because if you're not vocal about what you're experiencing, you're sitting, like you say, and you're suffering, and that's never okay.
Have you heard from people about like the way you've been open and some of the lyrics in your songs that, hey, this has helped me a little bit?
Yeah, and I think that's what, you know, that's partially why I do this, because it means that people feel like they have a voice, they're able to stand up and say what their experiences is, and everyone's different, but it's also just important to be vocal and speak up, you know?
Oh, hey there, intrusive thoughts, we got off on the wrong foot back there, come on in, I'll put the kettle on. They're just intrusive thoughts, and maybe I'm not all that strange.
That's Lola Young. Her album is titled This Wasn't Meant For You Anyway, and she'll be performing at the Coachella Valley Music and Arts Festival. Lola, thank you so much for stopping by.
No worries. Thank you.
This is NPR News.
On the hit medical drama The Pitt, actress Taylor Dearden is being celebrated for her portrayal of a talented young emergency room doctor who, like Dearden, is neurodivergent.
Recognizing that something's hard for anyone and then being able to overcome it if you are neurodivergent, like, hopefully that should just make it even sweeter.
I'm Elsa Chang. How The Pitt portrays neurodivergence and gets it right. On All Things Considered from NPR News.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. China is raising the stakes in the growing global trade war sparked by President Trump's sweeping tariffs on dozens of countries. They took effect today. The finance ministry in Beijing says it's adding another 50% levy to its 34% tariff on imports of American goods. That raises China's total tariff on U.S. imports to 84%. NPR's John Ruwitch in Beijing says China is pledging not to be bullied by the U.S.
China's casting this whole thing in kind of stark black and white terms. It's essentially right versus wrong. Beijing projects itself as a champion of free and fair trade now and of multilateralism, and it accuses the U.S. of engaging in selfish and irresponsible protectionism.
President Trump has imposed a 104% tariff on U.S. imports from China. Economists continue to warn the trade war will raise prices for American businesses and consumers. The president argues his trade policies are working. He points to countries seeking to negotiate tariffs with the U.S. The CEO of Delta Airlines says the global trade war is prompting the airline to drop its earnings outlook for 2025, saying the uncertainty is stalling growth. The National Weather Service says flood warnings remain in effect from Ohio to eastern Texas, with many rivers still swollen from recent rains. This is NPR News. A federal judge is ordering the Trump administration to admit journalists from the Associated Press to news events. As NPR's David Folkenflik reports, the judge calls it unlawful for the White House to exclude the AP.
President Trump and other senior government officials had shut the Associated Press out of dozens of major events at the Oval Office and elsewhere because the news service refused to go along with Trump's decree that the Gulf of Mexico should henceforth be known as the Gulf of America. The AP goes by the historic name for the body of water, but notes Trump's order. Judge Trevor McFadden had seemed skeptical of the AP's arguments last month. In his order, however, he found that the White House actions had harmed the AP's ability to cover the news. McFadden, a Trump appointee, wrote, quote, "The AP's exclusion has been contrary to the First Amendment." No comment yet from the White House. David Folkenflik, NPR News.
Nearly 2 hours after that ruling, two AP journalists were excluded from the White House pool to cover one of the president's speeches. The death toll in the Dominican Republic has risen to at least 113 following yesterday's collapse of a nightclub roof in Santo Domingo. It's unclear what caused that roof at the Jet Set Club to give way. Among those killed were two former Major League Baseball players. One of them, Octavio Dotel, won a World Series ring with the St. Louis Cardinals 14 years ago. In early trading on Wall Street, stocks are sharply lower. I'm Dave Mattingly in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the station and from Bank of America. From local shops to global enterprises, Bank of America is committed to helping businesses of all sizes make every move matter. Learn more at bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness. From Indeed, committed to giving job listings increased visibility with relevant candidates through its sponsored jobs feature. Learn more at indeed.com/NPR. And from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation at macfound.org.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Leila Faldin in Washington, D.C. Three children who don't have legal status in the U.S. are expected back in school this week in Sackett's Harbor, New York. The kids and their mom were detained during a raid last month on a dairy farm. As NPR's Brian Mann reports, the family was released following protests and a bipartisan lobbying effort.
This story begins in late March when public school teachers, including Jonna St. Croix, learned three of their students, two teenagers and a third grader, had been detained along with their mother during a late night raid.
I understood that there may be some students in my classroom that were vulnerable, but I certainly did not expect this to happen.
Government officials aren't releasing the names of the family for privacy reasons. St. Croix says the reaction in the Sackett's Harbor Public School after they were sent to a migrant detention facility in Texas was immediate.
During our planning periods and lunch periods, we just worked to figure out what we could do to get them back.
That effort quickly spread to much of the community of Sackett's Harbor, a conservative small town near the U.S.-Canada border that voted for President Donald Trump. For people like 19-year-old Berlin Urbina, the big national debate over immigration was suddenly real and personal.
I mean, it was shocking at first because I knew those kids. I had classes with them. I had played in gym class with the little boys, so it was devastating for everyone.
Bring our kids back!
Last weekend, Urbina marched with nearly 1,000 other people here, demanding the mom and her kids be sent home. Not everyone here agreed. Don Pitcher joined a small counter-protest and said migrants without legal status should be deported.
Bottom line is, you either got to be here on a work visa, have a green card, or come here legally. And when you don't, these are the consequences.
One twist in this case is that Trump administration border czar Tom Homan owns a vacation home in Sackett's Harbor. He wasn't here over the weekend, but protesters marched past his house.
Tom Homan took our kids!
In a statement, U.S. Customs and Border Patrol officials said the raid that triggered this case actually began as part of a criminal investigation targeting a foreign national who allegedly possessed child pornography. Speaking with local television station 7 News, Homan suggested the family was being held as part of that investigation.
Can they provide information and evidence in this crime? Were they victimized?
Local officials dispute that account and said they feared the family would be deported out of the U.S. Efforts to bring them home grew to include local dairy farmers, a Republican state assemblyman, and Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul, who told NPR this raid should never have happened.
The door is broken down. There are masked individuals with guns that go into a child's bedroom.
Hochul confirmed yesterday federal immigration police have released the mother and 3 children. Berlin Urbina says she's happy the pressure campaign seems to have worked.
It's amazing, I think, that everybody came together.
Jonathan Croix, who teaches social studies, says the debate over immigration and Trump's deportation policy is complex. But for her, this moment is simple.
I am so grateful, and just an empty desk really stands out, and I can't wait for them to be back in our classrooms. I'm so grateful for everyone who helped.
Local officials say this family was already attending court hearings aimed at gaining legal status. That process will now resume. Ryan Mann, NPR News, Sackett's Harbor, New York.
President Trump has set out to drastically reshape the federal workforce. And yesterday, he got some help in the effort from the U.S. Supreme Court.
In a brief unsigned order, the court said the administration is free to move forward with the firing of 16,000 probationary federal employees. But the decision wasn't a total victory for the administration, since, for now at least, the court made no ruling on whether the firings themselves were actually legal.
NPR's Nina Totenberg has been following the case and joins us now to break it all down. Hi, Nina.
Hi, Layla.
Okay, so let's jump in here. This is only the latest case in which the Supreme Court has taken a so-called emergency action at the behest of the Trump administration. And lately, they're winning more than they're losing, right?
Yes. On Friday, the court allowed the Trump administration to cancel millions of dollars in education grants. Then 2 days ago, the court threw out a lower court action temporarily barring the deportation of alleged Venezuelan gang members, though there was a caveat that required all the deportees to have a hearing before a federal judge on their individual deportation orders. And yesterday, the court threw out a lower court order that barred the administration from firing 16,000 probationary employees. The court said that the plaintiffs in the case were not the employees themselves, but nonprofit groups who failed to show that they themselves would be hurt by the firings.
Okay, let's drill down on this latest one. What does probationary in this context mean?
it means the fired employee has to be on the job for a year or less, or in some cases more, time that includes people who are serving in a job that they were promoted to, for instance.
Okay, so the Trump administration asked the Supreme Court to get rid of that lower court order, and it did. So what happens now? Do these fired employees have any recourse left?
Yes, but it's going to take time, and therein lies the rub. The employees have to first challenge their firings at the Merit Systems Protection Board, which is the federal agency charged with protecting civil servants. And for the most part, the most efficient way to do that is systematically with a class action that says, essentially, we are representing all of these similarly situated fired employees, and we as a class should be reinstated. But in order to be certified as a class, they have to go before an administrative judge at the Merit Systems Protection Board. And so far, there have been more than 10,000 cases filed since October, including 20 class action suits. And I would presume that when the dust settles, there will be lots more class actions.
A lot of suits. Can the Merit Systems Protection Board actually act quickly?
The MSPB system is meant to be fast, with cases finalized in 120 days, and the judge's decisions become final in 35 days unless there's some intervening action by the Merit Systems Protection Board. Initially, any appeal would be taken by the MSPB board, but the agency didn't even have a quorum until 2 days ago, and the two board members there for the moment might well cancel each other's votes out. And in any event, the law allows a relatively quick appeal to the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. And in that setting, for sure, there will be thousands of employees who do have legal standing to sue and have been harmed.
NPR's Nina Totenberg. Thank you, Nina.
Thank you.
This is NPR News.
For decades, the religion of Silicon Valley was technology, but Christians there are becoming more vocal about their faith, and it's catching on. That's next time in Here and Now.
Did you know you can access the world of public radio? The latest news, standout podcasts, captivating stories, just by speaking? Ask your smart speaker to play NPR or this station by name.
Good morning, I'm Leila Faldin. Have you ever taken an Uber and then left something in the car? Well, you're not the only one. And chances are you didn't leave the weirdest thing behind either. Uber released its annual Lost and Found Index showing all the items passengers have forgotten, like a urinal and 10 live lobsters. The most common items forgotten were phones, keys, and wallets. The lesson here is check before you exit and maybe leave the urinal at home. It's Morning Edition.
Support for NPR comes from this station. And from Uma, a cloud-based phone service for any size business. with an automated virtual receptionist, video meetings, and other features to connect to customers and coworkers anywhere at uma.com/NPR. And from Moderna, committed to protecting people from COVID-19, the CDC recommends getting a second dose of this season's COVID-19 vaccine for those 65 and older. Doctors can advise about getting a second dose. This is NPR.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm Martinez. Parents planning to send their kids to college may have a lot of questions right now since the Trump administration gutted the agency that administers federal student loans. It says the Small Business Administration may take over management of nearly $2 trillion in loans. At the same time, President Trump's tariff plan has shaken markets, shrinking the value of 529 college savings plans. So what do all those changes mean for college-bound students?
It's a nightmare, honestly.
That's Stuart Siegel. He's a longtime financial aid advisor who owns College Tuition Solutions Incorporated. I asked him how he's advising parents and students during uncertain times.
I'm not so concerned about the parents who are looking for student loans right now. They're going to be able to get them. It's the people who are in repayment or about to go into repayment. You know, we have students graduating, parents who have PLUS loans, the parent loans, undergraduate students. They're very concerned. And at this point, yes, it is awful for somebody with almost 30 years of experience in this to be able to say, I just don't know how this is going to play out.
So for a parent that has a kid who plans to enroll in college in a year or so, are you saying that they should be okay, or should they be doing anything different now than before?
Well, if you have a student going to college in a couple of years, there's a number of things you have to do regarding student loans or parent loans. That's something that they should discuss with their financial planners in terms of having a plan to repay their loans. So what I try to do is have parents do a couple of things, and that is have a money talk with their students. This is probably the most productive thing families can do, is discuss what the parents can do financially. And if the student understands that, when they go into their college search, they have to look at the financial aid part of it. And they are much more likely to take price into consideration. This is a great way to manage expectations.
Now, do you think that savings plans like a 529 are still a safe bet? I mean, I know you specialize in federal student aid, but when it comes to saving for college, I mean, what kind of security does a parent have on that?
Right now, if I was a parent starting a plan, for example, I think I'd be putting my money into cash equivalents, CDs, money markets, that sort of thing. If you are finding yourself with a diminished 529 at the moment, you have to look at some of the alternatives, including if you own your own home, you can always take out a home equity or a line of credit, or you can go to a bank and take out a loan, or even a parent loan to undergraduate students. The PLUS loan program, which many parents are aware of, if they utilize that for a while until their assets recover, that's certainly an option for them.
Do you have a single message that you have for parents that might be panicking when they see the world's finances look the way they look right now?
The best advice I can give people, if they're saving for college or they're looking towards college in this couple of years, is just do the best you can today. You can't look too far in the future because you just don't know.
All right, Stuart Siegel is the owner of College Tuition Solutions Incorporated. He advises parents on how to navigate college financing. Stuart, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
An American classic, The Great Gatsby, turns 100 years old tomorrow. Later today on All Things Considered, a look at how its narrative about class differences being taught in schools today. This is NPR News.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm Martinez. If you've dabbled in dating apps, you probably know how cutthroat online dating can feel. But the hit YouTube series Pop the Balloon or Find Love takes it to a whole new level.
Do you want children?
Yes.
I'm not having no babies.
I know.
On the show, someone looking for love appears before a panel of other singles, all holding a red balloon. If panelists see or hear anything they don't like, they pop their balloon. It can get a little vicious, but some contestants have found love, and this Thursday, a live version of Pop the Balloon comes to Netflix. I spoke with the married couple who created the show, Arlette Amoli, and her husband, Bolia Matundu, who goes by BM. So, BM, what made you think this is gold? I can make something out of this.
Because I like the idea of the whole people standing in a line. It's kind of like speed dating, where you can basically pick somebody fast and pop a balloon if you don't like them. And I thought, you know, this is actually a good idea. And I felt like there's probably two things that people most speak about in this world, which is one, relationships, and two, sports. So I was like, okay, let me see what I can do here.
You know, it's 2025, and online dating is just kind of a normal thing now. People are swiping on their phones, figuring out how and who to date online. How does this show compare to online dating, would you say?
Yeah, what differs it from online dating is these thoughts that you would have in your head when you're online dating, you're now kind of like forced to say it to the person instead of just swiping left or swiping right.
And when people are in that situation, I mean, how do you feel like they handle these types of situations? It's not easy sometimes to just kind of look someone eye to eye and explain to them why you don't like them or aren't interested in them.
Exactly. Yeah, it gives you a glimpse of the person's character. Some people, you know, they can answer a difficult question with a little bit more decorum, whereas others will just be completely blunt and just tell you the honest truth. So it just lets you see, oh, okay, yeah, this person's not for me based off of how they respond to specific questions.
Yeah, and sometimes that blunt, honest truth can venture into mean territory. Let's hear a clip, because there have been criticisms of the show that it thrives on these viral mean moments where participants say some pretty nasty things about each other. Let's listen to one exchange here.
How did you end up popping your balloon for Brian?
Hey, Brian, I love the way you speak, but for me, it was the pants. I don't like the pants too tight. I'm kind of ghetto, too, so I like them a little loose, and that was just it for me.
How old are you?
34.
34? Mm-hmm.
But it's just me. I'm a single parent. Okay. There's no man in my life.
Okay. Why is the reason for there no man in your life?
Well, my first child, his father passed away, and the other two are nowhere to be found.
They do you like that? What's wrong with them?
Only God knows.
Or is there something wrong with you?
Possibly, but I think I'm just fine.
All right, so that's one exchange. I mean, other times contestants have been accused of colorism and body shaming. I mean, how do you respond, Arlette, to the criticism that your show maybe trades in mean kind of superficial discourse?
I think every now and then we do have those small little moments where someone is just a little bit more brutally honest than what people are used to, and that's what happens to go viral. We just tell our contestants, you know, you don't know these people. Take what they're saying with a grain of salt. A lot of the times, the people on the stage or on the show, they're not even offended. A lot of them actually become friends after the show.
Now, the show isn't all about rejection. So let's hear a love match. This is Ashley, the contestant who popped her balloon after a potential match said he wanted kids. Let's hear that one.
So I just have one final question. So, Ashley, is it going to be a yes for you?
Yeah. He's going to take me off the mat. Bye, y'all.
And is it a yes for you?
Yes.
Oh, my God, we got our first match!
Yeah. So there we go, Arlette. You sound just as happy as the contestants when they make a match. How many people do you think have actually wound up dating long-term-ish after meeting on your show? I know the show is not very old yet, but, I mean, how many people do you think are still dating that have decided to match?
Oh, man. Oh, gosh, that's a hard question.
We have about 8. We have about 8 to 10.
Oh, 8, babe?
Yeah.
Why do you think people sign themselves up for this? Why would someone put themselves through this?
Because some people need help. They need something new, something different. So a lot of people want to try it out and see. And some people as well, they're seeing results. You know, they're seeing results. So they're like, you know what? This person found love. Let me go and try it. It might work for me.
And I guess if they wind up being together for the rest of their lives, they have a funny story to tell how they met, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Arlette Amuli and Bolia Matundo are the creators of Pop the Balloon or Find Love. It comes to Netflix tomorrow.
A singer who first hit the Billboard charts in the 1950s has done it again at the age of 90. Stephen Thompson of NPR Music reports.
Over love letters in the sun.
Pat Boone used to be a staple of the Billboard charts. The straight-laced crooner sold tens of millions of records en route to a prolific career. Much of his early chart success came from his status as a wholesome counterpart to Elvis Presley, and from a lucrative willingness to re-record R&B songs by black artists. Just to be clear, that is not Little Richard, it's Pat Boone's 1957 cover of Tutti Frutti. When Billboard's Adult Contemporary chart was introduced in July of 1961, Pat Boone was on it. Now, for the first time in nearly half a century, he's back on that chart with the song One, Voices for Tanzania, which is credited to Pat Boone World Missions.
One, I am one, like no other human being, I am one.
As its title suggests, the song is a benefit for infrastructure projects in Tanzania, clean water initiatives in particular, and features an assortment of country and gospel singers, including Lee Greenwood, Vince Gill, and Larry Gatlin. Before this week, Pat Boone hadn't been seen on a Billboard chart since 2007, when his album We Are Family, R&B Classics, made a brief appearance on the top R&B and hip-hop albums chart. Who's to say Pat Boone and hip-hop don't go hand in hand?
Okay, listen up, everybody. We are family.
This week, Pat Boone set a new record for the longest span between songs on the Adult Contemporary chart, 63 years, 8 months, and 3 weeks. And he's got a decent shot at returning someday. After all, if Perry Como and Paul Anka can revisit the pop charts every holiday season, why couldn't Pat Boone? Stephen Thompson, NPR Music.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm A. Martinez.